Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. A senior official at South Sudan's National Ministry of Health says the number of people who died from malaria and waterborne diseases in Fangak County was amplified by local authorities.
The whole thing is that there is no strange disease. Because of the flooding, the number of the malaria cases went up.
And some residents of Bor Town say the civil servants' strikes have brought work stoppage to many people.
I was on the road this morning and I was riding on my motorbike. I almost was about to knock somebody down because they were jumping up, others were running, and also they have mobilized some bodies also, say they are teachers, and say we need our right.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan says about 14.3 million people across the country will need humanitarian assistance in 2022. The UN says the political situation in the country remains unpredictable and vulnerable Sudanese will need support in physical and mental health issues. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Alimbek Tashkanklov, UN OCHA's public information officer in Sudan, says according to the humanitarian response plan for 2022, it will need $1.9 million to provide assistance and support Sudan's most vulnerable people, including internally displaced persons, refugees being hosted by Sudan, and vulnerable Sudanese communities. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum Tuesday, Tashkanklov says despite progress that has been made, securing international debt relief, economic reforms, and achieving macroeconomic stability, taking measures to implement the Juba Peace Agreement will take time before ordinary Sudanese start feeling the day-to-day impact of changes.
Humanitarian needs continue to grow across Sudan as the economic situation and food insecurity continue to affect millions of people. About 14.3 million people, almost one in every three persons, are estimated to need humanitarian assistance in 2022.
The UN official says the economic crisis in Sudan, including skyrocketing inflation, has resulted into high levels of food insecurity. Tashkanklov says many displaced people from Darfur are also in need, many of whom have lived most of the past 18 years away from home due to armed conflict or other violence. Tashkanklov says people from Darfur and other parts of the country have witnessed increase in security and localized intercommunal conflict, while floods and disease outbreaks strain the limited ability of state institutions to provide basic services.
The 2022 humanitarian response plan will seek to provide assistance and support to 10.9 million most vulnerable people in Sudan, internally displaced people, people who have recently returned to their places of origin, refugees being hosted by Sudan, and vulnerable Sudanese.
In 2021, the UN says humanitarian partners assisted more than 7.4 million people in need despite low funding. About 5 million people received food and livelihood assistance, 2.4 million people were able to access health services, and 1.4 million people were rich with water, sanitation, and hygiene services. However, Tashkanklov says the assistance was not the full assistance package or range of services provided in many cases, as agencies were forced to reduce the scope of response due to lack of funding. He says the humanitarian response plan for 2022 will prioritize life-saving multi-sectoral assistance to the most vulnerable people.
A collective effort of all humanitarian actors and stakeholders in the country will complement government strategies and priorities to reduce humanitarian needs in the country. The plan will address the specific needs of women, children, disabled, and other vulnerable groups.
Sudan hosts about 1.2 million refugees and asylum seekers, along with hundreds of thousands of foreign migrants, which makes it among the top 10 countries hosting refugees, according to the UN. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Senior officials with Sudan's Ministry of Health are disputing a report that more than 80 people died of strange illness in Jonglei State's Fangak County. A national ministry official says Jonglei State Health Ministry and aid agencies deployed health experts to Fangak to assess the situation. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Early this month, Fangak Commissioner Biel Boutros Biel said nearly 90 people, mostly children and the elderly, died of what he called a strange disease. He said those affected developed symptoms such as diarrhea, fever, joint pains, vomiting, body weakness, and loss of appetite. At the time, a national ministry spokesperson, Dr. Victoria Anip Majur, said the ministry was in touch with local officials in Fangak to get more information and would send a team to conduct an assessment. Samson Paul Baba, acting undersecretary in the Ministry of Health, says the investigation team sent to the area could not verify the deaths reported by local authorities. He says the team discovered that the deaths were due to a surge of malaria cases due to the overflooding in the county and lack of health facilities in the area.
One thing is that there is no strange disease. Because of the flooding, the number of the malaria cases went up. And because of the flooding, some people could not access health facilities. That's the whole thing. The whole thing is malaria. Not even that number couldn't be proven. You see, because if you have to prove death, you have to count the graves, isn't it? I think there is nothing there.
Baba says the health ministry continue to work with state and county authorities and aid agencies to ensure that flood-affected communities in Fangak and other affected counties have access to much-needed health services. Dr. John Rumuno, Director General for Preventive Health Services at the National Health Ministry, says there was a surge in malaria cases in New Fangak based on the symptoms presented by those affected.
Around 50% of the cases which present there tested positive for malaria on RDT, and the others are suspected cases of malaria. So this means the situation is actually the common illness on ground is malaria. And this has been aggravated by the situation of flooding, which has made traveling difficult. People are not accessing the nearest facility. Yes. And so they are not receiving treatment in time.
Dr. Rumuno says the National Health Ministry sent truckloads of medicine to help treat communities of the common illnesses in the area.
We sent a team with supplies, and the supplies we have sent actually will be enough for at least three months for population of 100,000 population. With that, the local authority can use supplies to treat all the common illnesses in the area. In addition, we sent a medical emergency organization called MedAir, which is doing feasibility assessment to increase services in the areas which are affected by flood in that location. So with this, we hope that the people in New Fangak will be able to have services for treatment of common illnesses.
Fangak County is one of the areas of Jonglei State severely affected by records flood this year. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Bor, where some residents of Jonglei State capital Bor say the ongoing civil servants' strike has disrupted their lives. The residents say public schools, water station, and some health facilities have been closed down due to the strike. Some of the protesters blocked the Bor airstrip and the road leading to Juba on Monday, paralyzing traffic within the town. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Last week, hundreds of Jonglei state employees rejected their salaries and staged demonstrations to protest what they call the state's modified salary structure, which does not follow the new salary structure ordered by the National Ministry of Labor and Public Service 2 months ago. Civil servants say Governor Dinei Jok Chagur, Deputy Governor Antipas Nyong Kucha, and other state officials increased their own salaries by a significant amount but did nothing to help ordinary government workers. They say salaries for the constitutional post holders range between 500,000 to 200,000 South Sudanese pounds, while salaries for other government workers range between 1,000 and 10,000 South Sudanese pounds. Last Thursday, civil servants temporarily called off their strike after state officials agreed to meet all of their demands. They warned the demonstrations would resume if the government officials failed to live up to their commitments. Today, hundreds of protesters blocked the Bor airstrip and the Juba Bor highway, paralyzing traffic. Bor resident Jacob Ajang says since civil servants went on strike more than a week ago, it's been difficult for people to go on with their day-to-day activities.
I was on the road this morning and I was riding on my motorbike. I almost was about to knock somebody down because they were jumping up, others were running, and also they have mobilized some bodyboarders also, say they are teachers, and say we need our right. So people are scared. People are scared actually, because life is at risk.
Ajang says he worries that if the strike and public demonstrations continue much longer, they may turn violent. Ajang is urging the state authorities to address the civil servants' issues so the lives of citizens can return to normal.
Let the government of Jonglei, particularly the governor, intervene and do something and give the right payment to the owners so that people can go and sit. Because they have right and they are teachers, they educate people, and I believe they can be rewarded by what the President Key said.
Bor resident Akenyagai also says the strike has disrupted people's daily lives. Guy says public schools have been closed for a week and schools' 8 children, especially candidates who should be preparing for final exams, are stranded. He also says local hospitals are closed due to the strike.
The people of Jonglei are really suffering. Like if you go to the hospital today, people are not treated and the hospital is closed and no medication in the hospital. And assuming somebody is being rushed as for emergency, that person will pass away. And this can affect us. So I'm urging the government to listen to the voice of the people who are on strike, like the doctors and the teachers who are been in strike. So I'm saying that the government should work on and do their best to make sure that these people are paid their dues according to what they are demanding.
Jonglei State Acting Governor Tuong Majuk said last Thursday that the government recognized the civil servants' rights and would release funds to pay their full salaries and allowances. When asked today what went wrong, Majuk said he was not ready to provide a statement until the committee tasked with investigating the root causes of the protest in Bor arrived from Juba. Protester Mayanu Kur says since state officials have backtracked on their promises to address the civil servants' demands, the protest will continue.
We need our basic salary times 2 and all the additional allowances are stipulated by the Ministry of Public Service and Labor. This thing was resolved by the presidency and this thing should be effected immediately in all the states, but it has not been effected in the Jonglei state. Actually, they have been fooling with us. They are fooling around with us because if you prepare a check ready to dispense to the public for payment and then again revoke saying that there is no money, that means you are fooling. You are trying to blindfold people. You are fooling around with people. So actually, they are playing with us. And actually, civil servants in Jonglei state are frustrated and we are going to remain on road until our money is paid.
Protester Yuang Arao says he is frustrated by the way state officials treat civil servants.
They are trying to dodge us with some lame excuses by saying that we are going to solve this problem, of which they have not reached that point from the beginning up to now. So I don't know what the governor is doing exactly there in Juba. SDP is ambassador to Juba. Is he not our state governor? We have been complaining a lot, but he's not trying even to come to see what is exactly in his state. We will never leave this road until the governor releases our money.
Some activists and citizens of Bor blame the ongoing demonstrations in the state on the absence of key members of the executives, including the governor and his deputy, for nearly 3 months. Citizens are calling on Governor Dine Chagur and his deputy, Antipas Nyok, to return to the state and resolve the crisis with civil servants. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization says COVID-19 is here to stay. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is most special about you?
I don't like disappointing people because of my actions. The way it pained me when somebody has disappointed me, I think about the same pain that I will cause to someone whom I have disappointed.
I'm someone who is very friendly, and I can interact with different people without considering their conditions and their status.
One thing special about me, I love the way God has created me, and I love being myself. I don't need to disguise myself like somebody, or I don't need to put myself pretend like someone. I appreciate the way God has created me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at the reaction of African scientists to the CDC recommendations on the use of Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Scientists and health advocates in Africa say they are deeply disappointed by a statement from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. The CDC last week recommended the Moderna and Pfizer jabs ahead of the Johnson & Johnson because of concerns. Because of the concern, the Johnson & Johnson shot could cause rare blood clots. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is one of the most widely used in Africa because it's a single-dose shot that does not require ultra-cold storage. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
Health communities in Africa are concerned that the CDC's linking of the J&J vaccine with rare but potentially fatal side effects will spark widespread rejection of the jab. The president of the Southern African Society of Thrombosis, Professor Barry Jacobson, says it's already started.
I've been inundated with calls of people saying, you see, you're poisoning us, we don't want to take this, and we're getting the second-hand vaccines, and we shouldn't be getting the J&J, should only be getting the Pfizer.
South Africa's top epidemiologist, Professor Salim Abdul Karim, maintains J&J's a safe jab.
If you had to just look at, for example, thrombosis from cases of COVID-19, it's far higher than what we see from the vaccine. So there's no question the vaccine has a net benefit, even in the face of these side effects. So the anti-vax movement is just wrong.
The CDC recommendation followed the occurrence of a rare and sometimes fatal blood clotting issue called thrombosis with thrombocytopenia syndrome, or TTS, that specifically affected the brain in people who got the J&J vaccine.
The fact that CDC came out and said that it shows no insight into the fact what we face in Africa, where in Africa there's a problem with cold chain storage and the fact that the patients can't get to more than one vaccine. So far,
Jacobson says he doesn't understand why the CDC singled out the J&J jab.
We have seen thrombosis occurring with all the vaccines, but the fact of the matter is, if one gets COVID, the risk of thrombosis is massive. It's a much greater risk of dying of a thrombosis from getting COVID and then subsequently getting a thrombosis and dying than from being vaccinated and getting a thrombosis, where the risk is minuscule compared to the other group.
Jacobson was on the safety committee that oversaw one of the world's biggest vaccine trials, when 500,000 health workers in South Africa received the J&J vaccine earlier this year. That trial, called Sisonke, came to a temporary halt in April when the CDC paused use of the vaccine after 6 cases of TTS in the US. After analyzing more data, the CDC gave the green light to the jab, saying its benefits outweighed its risks. Why the CDC would now, out of the blue, again link the J&J vaccine with this type of thrombosis, Jacobson says, is beyond him.
If you look at the true incidence, it's in 1 in 500,000 to 1 in 1,000,000. So you have a higher chance of being struck by lightning. We have looked at the cases after the first round of Sisonke, and we had 2 cases of TTS, both of whom I actually was involved with, and both of whom have survived and were successfully managed.
Jacobson calls the CDC statement very irresponsible. He says it should have considered the consequences for countries where people don't have the luxury of preferring certain vaccines over others.
The fact that people are being vaccinated and it is protecting them is of major importance. And anything that can give the anti-vaxxers ammunition is really not acceptable. CDC, by putting out the statement, has made people scared about taking the J&J booster, and they shouldn't be.
The South African Health Department has reassured people that the J&J vaccine is safe. But Jacobson fears the CDC recommendation has done irreparable harm. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The World Health Organization warns the COVID-19 pandemic will not end until an equal distribution of life-saving vaccines between rich and poor countries ends. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In an assessment of the year gone by, WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the world is still in the grips of a pandemic that shows no sign of going away. He notes more than 3.3 million people have lost their lives to COVID-19 in 2021. That, he says, is more deaths than from HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. He says the odds of this turning around anytime soon are not good. He says there is consistent evidence the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus is spreading significantly faster than the Delta variant. He says it is likely that people who are vaccinated or have recovered from COVID-19 could be infected or reinfected.
None of us want to be here again in 12 months' time, talking about missed opportunities, continued inequity, or new variants. If we are to end the pandemic in the coming year, we must end inequity by ensuring 70% of the population of every country is vaccinated by the middle of next year.
Statistics show at least half of the world's population has received a COVID-19 shot, and the other half has not. People in rich countries have received about 50 times as many vaccine doses as those in the poorer countries. For example, WHO reports just over 10% of people in Africa have received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, compared with 64% in North America and 62% in Europe. Studies show booster shots are effective against the Omicron variant of the virus that causes COVID-19. WHO, however, says boosters should be given to the elderly and people who are immunocompromised and not to those at low risk, such as children. A senior advisor to the Director General, Bruce Aylward, refutes accusations that WHO is against boosters.
What WHO has said very clearly is that we want to make sure that every dose of vaccine used has the best possible impact to get us out of this pandemic. And what we're seeking is equity in the use of vaccines globally. The biggest bang for your buck is vaccinating someone at risk who has not received a dose of the vaccine.
Aylward notes most people who are hospitalized are unvaccinated. He says the goal right now is to make sure everyone gets the first dose before people at low risk get their booster shots. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tigrayan forces fighting federal troops in Ethiopia say they will withdraw to their home territory to move the year-long conflict toward a negotiated peace. Gilmore Dawit reports from Addis Ababa.
After months of fighting, forces of the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front say they are withdrawing their forces to their home Tigray region. The TPLA forces entered the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions after the Ethiopian government announced a unilateral ceasefire in June. Speaking to Reuters, TPLF spokesperson Gita Chawrada said the move is to pave the way for international community to take action regarding the situation in Tigray and for the Ethiopian government to stop using TPLF forces' advancement into Amhara and Afar as a pretext for continued war. So far, the Ethiopian authorities have not commented on the matter, but in Monday's press briefing, the Government Communication Services State Minister spoke of the advance by government forces in North Wollo zone of Amhara region. In a letter addressed to the United Nations Secretary General, Tigray region head Debretsion Gebremichael also made several appeals. He asked the UN to enforce arms embargo on both Ethiopia and Eritrea and also enforce a no-fly zone, including drones, over the airspace of Tigray. He also expressed his concern for the lives of ethnic Tigrayans living in other parts of Ethiopia. Gebremichael says most Tigrayans across the country are being targeted and arrested, while others still live in fear. According to regional leader, the TPLF wished the earliest to settle the 13-month Tigray conflict, which is taking lives of civilians and inviting proxy war to the region. Gebremichael also shared his concern about the situation in northern and western Tigray, where humanitarian conditions are dire. The UN Security Council is due to discuss on Ethiopia in a session Monday. The UN Undersecretary for Humanitarian Affairs, Martin Griffiths, is expected to brief the session, which is being held by the request of the United Nations and European nations. The UN says the conflict in northern Ethiopia has exposed over 400,000 people to famine in Tigray and made 9.4 million people dependent on aid. Gelmo Doit for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with John Kuduse and the song New Sudan. We have been listening to John Kuduse and the song New Sudan. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for spending your time with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.